Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342.
Encuentro Radio, la emisora de CEPAL.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria,
we are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices.
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. And I mean every word of it. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn, can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn. This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path. I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. But that's just the trouble. Washing the windows. Picking the cotton. You're just plain rotten. You thought I was kidding, didn't you? Picket lines, school boycotts. They try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. Oh, this whole country is full of lies. You all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust you.
Nina Simone, Mississippi Goddamn, and we are here on Mirrored Voices. Welcome, everyone. My name is Hannah. I'm here with Michelle and Mariana. How are you both today?
Hello, everyone. I'm tired. This day is difficult, right? And it's raining outside, so I run a little bit, but I'm okay. I'm happy to be here.
How are you doing, Michelle?
How are you? I am feeling impatient because someone has sent something from my home country through someone, so I'm very impatient and anxious because I don't know what it is. I'm hoping it's mayonnaise. But I'm good, Hannah. How are you?
I don't know. You may have seen that the U.S. elections were yesterday. Yeah. Last night, the results were rolling in. My brain did this funny thing of, I think, trying to protect me. I went to bed before the results were, because they announced the results at like 6 in the morning, 5, 6 in the morning. So I was kind of watching at night as some of the results were coming out and as it was progressing. Yeah. And then at some point I'm like, no, I have to go to bed. And then my brain, I had a dream, I think early in the night, that Kamala Harris won. And I think it was my brain's way of like, you can sleep. Okay. Yeah. Everything's fine.
Okay.
And it worked. I mean, I slept well. Mm-hmm. And then in the morning I was like groggy and thinking, wait, was that real? I didn't know who the winner was when I fell asleep. That can't be real. And then I woke up and checked my phone and it was not real. It was only in my imagination that she won. So we're gonna have to get ready for another 4 years of Donald Trump as the president of the United States, which is very concerning. That's how I'm doing today. We wanted to talk not necessarily about politics today, although if you want to hear some of that, Cuentos y Cuentas Claras this morning with Felix, I was on and Felix talked all about, you know, the presidential election in the U.S., what that means
for immigrants,
for
especially
Colombia, for immigrants, for international policies, you know, all of those things. So you can check that out when it goes up on the podcast version, which you can find all of the programs here on Encuentro Radio later on encuentroradio.com.co to listen to in podcast form if you couldn't catch us live. But today we're talking about something else.
Yeah.
And we're talking about some of the women that you may not have heard about in history class, that you may not have even heard about on your journey into feminism, because there's still a lot of people that have been part of paving the way for fighting for our rights, for continuing to fight for social change, but we don't necessarily recognize them or talk about them very much. So today's program is to give a little bit more light, a little bit more information on some of these names that maybe you've heard of and maybe you haven't. If you haven't, then now you know, and you can share with other people so we can continue to talk about women's stories and the importance that they have on our lives today as well. And to start off, we also have, you may have seen on the Instagram page for Sepalc Encuentro Radio, Michelle posted a video on our first woman of the day, a very powerful, influential woman that you may or may not have heard of.
True, because in my case, I didn't know she existed prior to seeing, I saw like a short clip of the Netflix series on TikTok, and then I was intrigued. I wanted to know more, because and also because it's short, it's not like one of those boring documentary series type of things. It's something short and very impactful. So I started by watching the series on Netflix, and I really liked it because, like, at the end of the series, they also put, like, pictures and put more information about the life of Madame C.J. Walker. And I thought it was very interesting because I didn't know that She was actually the first millionaire African-American woman in the United States. So I'll share a bit today in English.
Yeah, easier, yeah.
Because yesterday it was in Spanish, and there are some people who may have difficulties navigating Spanish, like me, when it comes to pronouncing certain words. Okay, so she was born as Sarah Breedlove on December 23 in 1867 in Delta, Louisiana. And her parents were former slaves, and for that reason, that why she had to move when they died. She was at the age of 7, and she had to live with the older sister. And at the age of 10, she had to start working as a domestic servant. And she also got married in 1882 at the age of 14, had one daughter, and then divorced her husband, Charles Walker, is when she changed her name to Madam C.J. Walker, taking the surname of her husband. And whereas her career beginnings are concerned, she worked as a laundry woman and cook. She also experienced hair loss due to scalp conditions, like even in the Netflix series, like her hair was so bad. And then she sought solutions for various hair care products and treatments until she became a sales agent for Annie Minerva, Turnbull Hair Care Products. And then she wanted to do more, but she felt like she was being stifled under Annie Minerva. That's when she founded, she developed her own hairline care products, and then she founded Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company in Denver, Colorado, partnering with her husband, Charles C.J. Walker. So they developed what is known as the Walker Method for hair growth and scalp care, and they built a network of sales agents and beauty schools. They also expanded the product line to include cosmetics and skincare, becoming one of the wealthiest self-made women of her time. Hence the name of the series on Netflix. It's called Self-Made, the inspiring story of Madam C.J. Walker, if I'm not mistaken. And then she also did some work in philanthropy and activism in 1910. She supported African women organizations such as the NAACP and YMCA. She founded scholarships and educational programs and advocated for women's rights and racial equality. She also participated in the 1913 Women's Suffrage March in Washington, D.C. However, she died on May 25th at her estate in Abington on Hudson, New York, left behind a business empire and a legacy of empowerment, estimated net worth approximately today $22 million. She also was inducted into National Women's Hall of Fame in 1993 and featured in various books and films and documentaries, like the one on Netflix, Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker. So basically, her life is something that serves an inspiration for entrepreneurs, because she did not just wake up as a millionaire. She had to start from the bottom. Mm-hmm. She had to practice everything, and she had to try and try again. She was a very stubborn woman in the series, at least.
She was in a good way, too. Probably,
yeah. And even when, like, there were times where her husband wanted to act like he was the one in charge, you know, el machismo, like, he's the man, he's the head of the house. She kept on insisting that this is my thing, this is something that I started, and it is something that I'll definitely see to the end. And she wanted to also create a legacy for her daughter, which she did, and her granddaughter also, who she adopted. She was like an adopted grandchild, something like that. So that is basically the history and the life of Madam C.J. Walker. And what's interesting is, even to present day, there's still the what do they call it? the sponsorships and the scholarships for women who want to get into healthcare and hair products and stuff like that. They're still present day scholarships under Madam CJ Walker.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think I knew. I mean, I recognize the name, but you know, you couldn't really ask me too many follow up questions.
Actually, I'm not recognized the name.
No.
No.
Yeah, it's, I think, incredible in a lot of ways of the, like, building up her success and from nothing addressing a big hole in the beauty industry that still exists a lot. Like, when you go to most, like, the beauty aisle in any store, most of it is still targeted towards, you know, certain skin types and shades, like makeup shades that are lighter skin, and hair type that's less textured. So the fact that she addressed those concerns so early on, and that we're still kind of trying to to get more accessibility for, like, beauty products for all people. And then the fact that she used her success to also lift up other black
women.
As opposed to just, like, oh, if I made it, you know, you should just work hard and it'll be like me. acknowledging that, you know, she could support other women in different ways, that she had the money to do that and did it, I think is incredible.
It really was, like, especially because as women of color, we tend to have these problems, especially when we move to different countries. Because, for example, right now, it's been over a year in Colombia, and I'm still yet to find something that goes well with my face. And sometimes when I'm speaking to my mom, I'm like, Colombia does not like my face. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because it's difficult finding something that is specifically for African women. Even when it comes to hair products, like, sometimes I have to order them online, or I have to find other means of getting them, because the products that we use as women of color are not the same as Colombians.
Exactly.
Yeah, actually, I have a friend in the university that she's from Buenaventura, from Cali, and she said that when she's trying to fix her hair, it's so difficult, and she's trying to take the opportunity to go to the aunts that have there in Buenaventura to make me some different, something like in the hair, because it's so different from someone that do that here in Bogota.
Let's go to a quick song break, and we'll be right back with more women that you should probably know about.
You know, every now and then I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never, ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. But we're going to take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're going to do the finish rough. The way we do Proud Mary. Rolling, rolling, rolling on the river. Listen to the story now.
Left a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day. And I never lost 1 minute of sleep. And I was worrying about the way the thing might have been. Big wheel keep on turning. Ooh, the Proud Mary keep on burning. And we're rolling, rolling, rolling.
And we're back. That was Tina Turner, of course, with Proud Mary. And we are back with more women that you may not have learned about, but you should. And we'll start today. So, Mariana, who do you have for us?
I want to know if you listen sometime in your life about Helen Keller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like so famous for like Latin people. That's why I choose her. I never listen about her. So she is Helen Adams Keller. She born in Tuscumbia, Alabama, June 27 in 1880, and she died in June 1 in 1968 in Easton, Connecticut. Was an American deaf, blind writer, speaker, and a political activist. At 19 months of age, she suffered a serious illness that caused the total loss of her vision and her hearing. Her inability to communicate from an early age was very traumatic for Helen and her family, so she was practically uncontrollable for a time. When she turned 7, her parents decided to talk for an instruction, and that is how the Perkins Institute for the Blind sent them a young specialist, that was Anne Sullivan, who was in charge of her training and achieved a breakthrough in special education. She continued to live by her side until her death in 1936. So after graduating for high school at Cambridge, Keller entered in the Radcliffe College, where she received two BA, becoming the first deaf-blind person to earn a college degree. During her job, she began to support socialists, and in 1905, she formed joined to the Socialist Party. Obviously, she's not just be part of the socialists. She's trying to promote the women's suffrage, workers' rights, and other left-wing causes, and was active in the American Civil Liberties Union, having come found in 1920. She retired from politics in 1924 to focus on disability rights and traveled around the world giving lectures until 1957. For her achievement, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by U.S. President Lyndon Johnson in 1964. Since 19, the numbers for me in English is so difficult. In 1980, by decree of Jimmy Carter, her birthday was and has been commemorated as Helen Keller Day. His life has been the subject of various artistic representation, both in film, theatre, and television, particularly Helen the Miracle Worker. So she has a special role in special education. So she marked a major advance in special education, although there was other similar cases, not such as that Laura Bridgman. However, Keller's teaching was the first to be reliable, recurring multiple writing words, and gave rise to many new special education methods. So, she, for the editors of the textbook General Psychology, know the significance of Keller case. She is the only one in her class pushed by an exceptionally talented teacher and keen observer who described the gradual development of her highly gifted students. So, she is not just fighting for the disability person rights. Actually, she trying to promote more things about the women. She published an autobiography, The Story of My Life, that was published in 1903, when she obviously speak more about how was the life, just like be a woman in the first moment and later to be like a deaf-blind people. So I guess was so important. I never heard a little bit about her. I know that you heard a little bit,
but was so important because actually she trained me like a memory of one of the most famous movies that we have. I know in Spanish is, creo que, Talentos Ocultos. I don't know how do you say that in English. Yeah, Hidden Talents. That was a good movie that talked not just about the black women and the feminists and the women in the science. So I guess was good idea trying to bring her today, because she is trying. Well, she was trying to find in different position and for different people.
Yeah, and actually, if you were able to catch after Cuentos y Cuentas Claras, so there was Open Space Conversations today, the program for another program in English with Global Mission Fellows from around the world, and they talked about education access. And one of the things they mentioned was special education or education that meets the needs of the students. For example, students with disabilities have a right to education just like everybody else. But that requires more training for the teachers as well to be able, you know, to have a student who is blind and deaf and can't communicate or learn in the ways that we often teach, which is by talking, by reading, all of these things. And, yeah, I remember watching in school a movie or at least a clip of about Helen Keller and Anne Sullivan and how they kind of figured out a way to communicate with each other to be able to kind of a mix of sign language, but like tactile, like in the palm, making out letters in the palm of her hand to be able to communicate and realize like, yeah, she has every right to an education and just as intelligent as everyone who has access to an education and has every right to learn and to share and to speak in the way that they can, in ways that we're still, I think, addressing in making education more accessible to everybody, I think is still something that we're struggling with.
Yeah, and I guess it's so difficult because actually I'm studying to be a teacher, but in my like normal classes, we talk about inclusion and all these things, but it's like, how I'm gonna do with a blind person in my class if I don't know how to work with that? So I guess it's so important for the future generation that wanna trying to be teacher, that in the university, not just here in Colombia, around the world, have the opportunity to teach us how we are gonna do with these people, because it's like give like a normal life, not give opportunities because they deserve these opportunities. It's like to trying to give them like the option to go to normal university and they not gonna feel like a part of the rest of the class.
I think in Meta, in the schools that we the school that we're working with in La Julia, I wasn't part of this class, but I think, I don't know if it was Alejandra who was working with a class that had a deaf student, and so there was an interpreter there who was, you know, translating or signing everything in the class. And how important that kind of access is, because I think pretty easily there are children in other parts of the country, other parts of the world who, you know, the school doesn't have a person trained in that or with the resources to hire another person who can specifically be working on translating. And it just means that there are still a lot of kids that miss out on education because of a disability that, you know, doesn't prevent them from learning, but the school isn't prepared to make it accessible to them.
True. I feel like it's amazing that they're actually people who have the heart to learn how to educate people living with disabilities, especially because in our cohort classes, GMFs, there's a girl who teaches deaf students. And I thought it was really amazing that Global Ministries has this different facet in which they actually are also working in raising awareness and promoting, educating people living with disabilities. I thought it was really amazing because I can imagine learning a new language is hard enough, but communicating in sign language, I think it takes a lot of dedication and mm-hmm. skill.
Yeah, I noticed for, I think, the first time that I can remember seeing when they give us these emails about, like, a town hall sort of meeting where all of the missionaries and global mission fellows should tune in for these important announcements. Mm-hmm. And they usually say, like, interpretation will be provided for, you know, different languages. And I think this mm-hmm. is the first time that I've noticed sign language was one of the options given, which is, I thought was great to see. And hopefully we can see more.
Yeah.
We'll go to Aretha Franklin for a minute, another important woman in music and history, and we'll be right back. Back today, I have Adrienne Rich. I don't know if either of you have heard of her.
No.
I had heard mentioned in passing once in one of our coffee feminist chats with Florence Thomas.
Okay.
Because I remember kind of jotting the name down, but really had never learned about her, never really heard about her. At that point, we were talking about maternity. But other than that, I didn't really know anything. Turns out, Adrienne Rich, in the United States, she was born in 1929. She died in 2012 at the age of 82. And she was a poet, very important in the early feminist movement. Well, not early, but because feminist movement has been going on since the beginning of time, basically. But in the feminist movement, in terms of feminist writers, very important, even though we don't hear her name very often. And she's a poet, had a very intense style of poetry, of using poetry to talk about women's suffering, to talk about racial injustice, to envision a different society that we could build. Very well known in her time, but then kind of people stopped mentioning her, stopped talking about her. I have two YouTube videos of her reading her poetry.
Okay.
So I think we can maybe start off with one. This is, it's not too long, and we have a little bit of time still. We'll start listening to Adrienne Rich reading Diving into the Wreck, one of her most famous works.
And this is called Diving into the Wreck. First, having read the Book of Myths and loaded the camera and checked the edge of the knife blade, I put on the body armor of black rubber, the absurd flippers, the grave and awkward mask. I'm having to do this not like Cousteau with his assiduous team aboard the sun-flooded schooner, but here alone. There is a ladder. The ladder is always there, hanging innocently close to the side of the schooner. We know what it is for, we who have used it. Otherwise, it is a piece of maritime floss, some sundry equipment. I go down, rung after rung, and still the oxygen immerses me, the blue light, the clear atoms of our human air. I go down. My flippers cripple me. I crawl like an insect down the ladder, and there is no one to tell me where the ocean will begin. First the air is blue, and then it is bluer, and then green, and then black. I am blacking out, and yet my mask is powerful. It pumps my blood with power. The sea is another story. The sea is not a question of power. I have to learn alone to turn my body without force in the deep element. And now it is easy to forget what I came for among so many who have always lived here, swaying their crenellated fans between the reefs. And besides, you breathe differently down here. I came to explore the wreck. The words are purposes. The words are maps. I came to see the damage that was done and the treasures that prevail. I stroke the beam of my lamp slowly along the flank of something more permanent than fish or weed. The thing I came for, the wreck and not the story of the wreck, the thing itself and not the myth, the drowned face always staring towards the sun, the evidence of damage worn by salt and sway into this threadbare beauty, the ribs of the disaster curving their assertion among the tentative haunters. This is the place, and I am here, the mermaid whose dark hair streams black, the merman in his armored body. We circle silently about the wreck. We dive into the hold. I am she, I am he, whose drowned face sleeps with open eyes, whose breasts still bear the stress, whose silver, copper, vermeil cargo lies obscurely inside barrels half-wedged and left to rot. We are the half-destroyed instruments that once held to a course the water-eaten log, the fouled compass. We are, I am, you are, by cowardice or courage, the one who find our way back to the scene, carrying a knife, a camera, a book of myths in which our names do not appear.
So that was one of her most famous works, Diving into the Wreck. Adrienne Rich was encouraged first by her father to read a lot. Read a lot of poetry, which she really enjoyed. She reflects later on, realizing that it was all written by men, and then wanting to kind of be a voice to break that out. Mm. She learned how to use poetry to kind of go against this mold. We think of poetry as often talking about love and beauty and these like simple things in life, and she kind of tackled these like big, heavy topics often in human history and injustice, in identity politics before we necessarily called them identity politics. Okay. So she, as a woman, as a lesbian, as a Jewish person, had this kind of intersection layering of marginalization, and using poetry to talk about that, to talk about different aspects, including other identities as well, in a way that wasn't too common before, especially from women and especially from LGBTQ people. She is famous for a quote she said, says, "Art means nothing if it simply decorates the dinner table of the power which holds it hostage."
Okay.
She was also an activist in the civil rights movement and anti-war movements in New York. She had previously been married to a man and raised three sons. Her husband ended up committing suicide, and she later, a few years afterwards, came out as lesbian in a publication of 21 love poems that were about sexuality and especially love between women, which was also, you know, scandalous at the time, talking about, you know, homosexual love and sexuality. But she was kind of breaking down a lot of those barriers, and doing it anyway, saying, like, even if you're scandalized by it, even if you don't like it, that's what I'm going to write. That's your problem, exactly. She also, in 1976, wrote a nonfiction book called Of Woman Born, about the institution of motherhood as a socio-historic construct. Conversations that we're still having today on reproductive rights and motherhood, or having children being a choice, being an option, one of many, as opposed to like a standard because you're a woman, or because you can have children that you should. In 86, she also wrote a volume called Compulsory Heterosexuality and Lesbian Existence. Again, we're still dealing with heteronormative attitudes of assuming that everyone is straight unless they come out otherwise. So addressing that compulsory heterosexuality, as she called it. She's considered among the most influential writers of the feminist movement, having written about 24, I think over 24 volumes of poetry and prose. She also, with this writing of Diving into the Wreck, which was part of a fuller volume, this the poem that we listened to was the title poem. In 1973, it was also what won her the National Book Award for Poetry the following year. However, she refused to accept the award alone and invited Audre Lorde and Alice Walker, two black women poets as well, to accept with her on behalf of all women. So again, we see this, like, using her position and platform to lift up other women, and addressing that even though she struggled with multiple layers of marginalization for being a lesbian Jewish woman, she still recognized where she had privilege as a white woman in society, and using the privilege or the platform that she had to be able to talk about racial injustice, to be able to lift up women of color who also deserved recognition. She refused to accept many awards, making statements about racial injustice, lack of diversity among award winners, or about politicians' use of trying to, like, name token artists instead of changing policy. Of, like, the PR of, like, oh, well, we'll award a lesbian woman this thing, and then we look better, right?
Yeah.
So she would call them out on it and say, I'm not accepting that award. She summed up her reason for writing and motivation in life as fighting to achieve, quote, the creation of a society without domination. We have, well, maybe we'll give our final thoughts, and then I can do, there's like 2 minutes of another poem that I think we can read. But any thoughts from you guys on Adrian or any of the women that we've learned about today?
Well, about Adrian, I guess one of the most difficult things for me is writing poetry. I guess that's something that it's not for, like, a normal person, I guess, like a special talent.
Yeah.
So I guess it's, like, so good that trying to recognize more about the women in this world, because it's more difficult for the women trying to, like, growing up in different situation, more in the poetry and literature, I guess it's more difficult for the women. So have women like this, like, not just support the women, support other communities that maybe need help. It's so good.
Sure, I'm with Mariana on this one, because I feel like people who do poetry and people who do art, they're amazing human beings, because you can put a canvas in front of me and tell me to paint, and the most I'll do is just put a flower on it.
Yeah.
And then you'll be saying all this weird stuff, and people will be like, oh, wow, it's amazing. It's going for $1 trillion. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like it's amazing having that skill set.
Yeah.
And I also have a lot of respect for her, because she's someone who started out living a heterosexual life, had kids, got married, but then she stayed true to herself. Like, she realized who she was, like, she was a lesbian, and she came out and she lived her truth. I feel like that is amazing, because I can imagine that there probably were people who were against it, who probably called her a liar or didn't believe that she's a lesbian considering her past life. But I think it's really amazing, really.
Yeah, she kind of lived what society told her she should do to be happy. Find a husband, raise children, you know, all the... Your poetry can be like a hobby, but focus on raising children, and then being able to break out of that very publicly and use her art and poetry to speak out about injustice. I think is always inspiring. People who have been blessed with those talents that not all of us are, use them for good work. Use them for change, for awareness, to fight for themselves and others. That's great.
Yeah, it's good.
So on that note, we will probably end with a final poem, a short poem by Adrienne Rich called What Kind of Times Are These?
There's a place between two stands of trees where the grass grows uphill and the old revolutionary road breaks off into shadows. Near a meeting house abandoned by the persecuted who disappeared into those shadows. I've walked there, picking mushrooms at the edge of dread, but don't be fooled. This isn't a Russian poem. This is not somewhere else but here. Our country, moving closer to its own truth and dread, its own ways of making people disappear. I won't tell you where the place is, the dark mesh of the woods, meeting the unmarked strip of light, ghost-ridden crossroads, leaf-mold paradise. I know already who wants to buy it, sell it, make it disappear. And I won't tell you where it is, so why do I tell you anything? Because you still listen. Because in times like these, to have you listen at all, it's necessary to talk about trees.
One more time, you believe God is a woman. chemistry. Yeah. And he's the universe when I'm the company. Yeah.